friends. Welcome to the Creative Impact Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Caldwell, and I'm so happy you're here. Each episode, I take some time to chat with fellow artists about life, faith, and the impact of the arts. Hi, friends. Happy 2024. I hope you had a really wonderful holiday season, and I'm so excited to jump into our first episode of 2024. Today, I'm joined by mentor and friend Anthony Gurley. Anthony and I met when I was in college at Belhaven University, as he had started a scholarship and mentorship program called Motivation Ministry. Anthony would describe himself as just an ordinary guy with a story to tell, and I'm so excited that he has put his story into a memoir called Deadly Dilemma. His book just launched yesterday, so I wanted to share this interview with you and encourage you to check out the book. In our conversation, we talk about the why behind the book and how his hope is that in sharing his journey and his story, that those of us who read it will be able to face our own stories and recognize the importance of asking the big questions in life. It is a powerful read and a powerful conversation today. Thank you so much for listening and being a part of this podcast. I know there are so many podcasts out there to listen to, so it means the world that you are listening to the Creative Impact Podcast today. I hope you enjoy our conversation and that you are encouraged today by Anthony's story. Well, Anthony, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yes. So it's fun, our connection through a ministry that you started back, I think it was in 2008, was about when you were getting Motivation Ministries going.
That was our first class.
Yes. And I was the incoming freshman class in 2008. So yeah. I believe, can't remember if I was in your first or second class of scholarship recipient.
I think you were in the first class because of the connection Courtney had had with Belhaven.
Yes.
So I know we had reached out to Belhaven. I think you were in the first class. I was still working full-time at Guilford College that year.
That's right.
And launched this on a part-time basis.
Okay. So. Yes. Well, that was such a gift and a blessing to be part of that program, because not only was it a scholarship program, but also like a mentorship. So you all helped us be connected with a mentor throughout our college experience, and that continued to serve me throughout my life.
Well, you were already so well connected with the department head there.
Right. That's true.
You know, I remember talking with her from the parking lot at my office at Guilford College when I was reaching to find, I needed to find, and she, I'll take care of that. She would take care of that. And we prayed with me sitting in my car at the parking lot in my office and her in her office at Belhaven University. I knew then something beautiful was happening.
Yes. So that's Cynthia Newland, and I love her so. She's still a mentor in my life and has been on the podcast as well. So it's just been a fun full circle thing to get to have you here. And thank you for the investment that you made in my life and getting to share your wisdom as well through that program. So it's been fun staying connected.
Thank you very much. But while we're a little later on, we'll have a chance to do a little follow-up to that, because that played an integral part in getting us to where I am right now with this project, actually.
That's true. Yes. Speaking of, so I'm so excited to introduce you to our listeners. So yeah, Anthony Gurley, who's here with me today, has had a long career at Guilford College.
Yes.
In the financial aid department. And can you remind me your title when you retired from there?
When I retired from there, I was the director of student financial services. We had merged a couple of departments, financial aid, student accounts, that sort of thing. And in between, I was associate dean of enrollment for a period.
Right. That's right. So, and has had kind of a variety of experiences and came from what we would maybe consider a harder background and, you know, not really having a lot in the way of, you know, means and things like that, but pursuing that college degree, kind of coming up against some roadblocks, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And then eventually finishing that out. And you have a beautiful family, wonderful wife and two children, three grandchildren. So
a wife of 51 years now.
Yes. Congratulations. That's incredible. Yeah. So the big thing that I'm excited to share with people today is your new book that is launching today. Yay! Yes. So.
Actually, it's interesting, Rachel. Today was the official launch date, but I learned on Monday that the Ingram, which is the actual press that prints the books, they started sending them out on Saturday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I had several emails and texts yesterday that my book arrived, or it's supposed to be here tomorrow.
Wow.
So that was a little bit of a surprise. I had not been informed of that, but that's okay. The earlier, the better.
Right. Exactly. That's great. Good. Well, I'm so excited for you and your launch today. Congratulations. And would love to let people know about the book. So it is called Deadly Dilemma, a memoir. Yeah. And it's really going through kind of your life's journey and looking at some overarching questions through that. So I'd love to let you share a little bit more about kind of just the overview of the book, and then we'll dive into some more specifics.
Well, I'll tell you how we got here.
Yes.
First. As you just said, I was born and raised in Eastern North Carolina, a small town, Goldsboro, a very large Air Force base there. Other than that, it's a traditionally agricultural community, and was raised in what would now be called Title VIII housing, a federal housing project. Mm-hmm. My first vivid memory of life I talk about in the book was Hurricane Hazel. Folks your age have no clue what that was, even in this part of the country. But folks my age, it was maybe the most powerful hurricane this part of the country has ever experienced.
Wow.
In 1954.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first vivid memory of life. So that's where I was born and raised. And when I was 11 years old, I mean, we were poor, but I didn't know what poor was. You know, we lived in the projects where our friends were, went to school.
Right.
I was 11 years old. I came home from school. By that time, I was in the seventh grade. And I came home from school having been cut from the seventh and eighth grade basketball tryouts.
Mm.
And I was devastated.
Yeah.
I was just devastated. I cried every step of the way home. I was the next to the last player cut.
Which makes it harder in some ways.
Yeah. Later on, I went on and made it the eighth grade, the ninth grade, and so on. But I was devastated. So I walk to the project, and as I get to the sidewalk up to the project, my daddy is leaving. Mm-hmm. He's got a clothes over his shoulder and a suitcase in his hands, and he's leaving. Those two things within an hour and a half of each other, I was devastated. We'd never been real close,
mm-hmm.
but it hurt, you know?
Yeah. For sure.
But, you know, it went on. Life went on. I didn't think a whole lot about it until a few years ago. I realized I didn't know any of my grandparents. Had one lived. He was bedridden. And, my kids and grandkids had a right to know Pappy.
Mm.
I mean, they know me. We've been integrally involved in their lives.
Yeah.
But they don't know all of Pappy because Pappy would never let them see some of Pappy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
They have a right to know, particularly as they get old enough to read it and appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a sociologist by academic training.
Yay.
So I decided to write my story. I was going to print 6 copies, give them to each of my children and grandkids, and one to Becky. Fairly early in the process, after 3 or 4 years of trying to garner the information to tell the story,
mm-hmm.
I had a dear friend who's made her living as a writer for 40 years read a preamble, which is heavy.
It is. I know. I remember
scary.
Yeah, you sent it to me and said, don't be alarmed, you know? And it's true. It is heavy.
And she read this and she looked me straight in the eye, Rachel, and said, Anthony, you need to rethink this.
Mm.
I thought she was going to tell me to burn it and never let it see the light of day. But she's in our Sunday school class, and I talked with her after Sunday school one morning, and she said, no, this is your story. It's your story. On the back of the book, it says, Anthony is not famous. He's not a celebrity. He's not an athlete. He's not a politician. He's just an ordinary guy with a story.
Yes.
But everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, this is just your story, but there's a plumber in Dubuque, Iowa that has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And he's never been willing to confront his story and deal with those things that color the landscape of one's life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't hold much back in here.
No.
I tell about the good times, the happy times, the wild times, and I talk about the not so good times, the not so happy times, the valleys.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it has a good ending. but the title suggests that often it doesn't.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, again, as a sociologist, I know that far too many people, and you've introduced this already, so I'll go ahead and do it. But it's my life story, and to that extent, it's not significant. But it's told under the umbrella of asking a very important question. And that is, are those good times and successes and victories and peaks that we all experience, thank the Lord, do they come often enough? Are they powerful enough and lasting enough to overcome what for many can be daily struggles mm-hmm. with failure, disappointment, loneliness, self-esteem, self-image? And we know statistically far too many people, if they even consciously ask the question, answer it no. And they make devastatingly bad choices. Mm-hmm. about their lives and sometimes the lives of those they love. So what started out as a, we're going to tell my story and give it to the grandkids and the kids, morphed into something that I had never intended and frankly had no clue what I was getting into. In terms of, I had no idea.
Yes.
But the process has fundamentally changed me. In a very good way.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I was curious to hear kind of how that process of going back, recounting these stories has impacted you.
Well, when I talked about my dad.
Yes.
When I talked about my dad. I mean, I grew up, we were never a church family, mm-hmm. but I was always in Sunday school and church because the church, the Oak Street Pentecostal Holiness Church, sent a bus through the project.
Okay.
And Mama always was sure I was on the bus going to Sunday school and church.
Nice.
By myself. I mean, wasn't what's going on. But the two memories I have of my dad, mm-hmm. we were never close, even before he left. And a couple of fishing trips where I couldn't do anything right, you know?
Yeah.
And the only two things I ever remember him saying to me, I never remember him telling me he loved me. What I do remember him back in the day, Rachel, back in the day when we had three black and white channels on the TV and that was it. You didn't have a remote, you know.
Uh-huh.
I remember him telling me, get out of the way. I can't see through muddy water.
Mm.
And don't ask me for a damn thing. Mm.
Wow.
Those two things have colored the landscape of my entire life.
Yeah.
Kind they of have.
That mental script.
I write a little bit about this. I've spent most of my life, even though I've continued to be a churchgoer, on a serious faith walk, and that's the other underlying theme in the book, that the faith walk that's been intertwined with all of this is I've never sought attention. This is so strange for me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I've been perfectly happy to be in the back of the room, right. You know.
Uh-huh.
My job required that I was up front some. And in the book, there's a picture of this Guilford College cheerleading team my second year. How in the world I ever got talked into doing that, I do not know.
I love that that's part of your journey, though. It's so fun.
But I've always been perfectly happy to stand back, to be invisible,
mm-hmm.
which is what my daddy told me to be,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And I've never asked for help. Never.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world I got the nerve up to ask Becky out on a date 12 o'clock on a Saturday to a basketball game that night.
Yeah.
And then 4 months later, 4 months, proposed marriage. 4 months. Wow. Who does that? I know who does that. God does that.
God does that. Yes, that's true.
I don't mean to get emotional with you, but I tend to get that way sometimes. So those two things that have colored the landscape of my life, a good part of it, because they were embedded in me as a small child, I've wrestled with. And the one thing this process has done for me, Rachel, they no longer have control of me.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, that's amazing.
I would never be here having this conversation with you mm-hmm. if they did.
Right.
First of all, I would have never agreed. I would have never written the book to its completion
mm-hmm.
and then decide to publish it. Because I had some idea that means that you can't publish it and expect that plumber in Dubuque, Iowa to find it if you don't promote it.
True.
You know?
It's such a hard balance there, yeah.
My friends ask me, well, how many do you think you're going to sell? I don't care. I don't know. I think I've done what God called me to do.
Yep.
I think I've told the story in a way that it addresses the question he wanted me to address for my own self and for that plumber in Dubuque.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's up to him to figure out how that plumber finds the book.
Right. And he works in some, as we say, mysterious ways and some really neat ways to get things in the hands of people that
exactly.
we could never
And that doesn't mean that now that it's published, I just sit and do nothing. I'm learning how to work with podcasters.
Right, exactly. Trying and, new things.
You know.
Exactly.
So all that is to say, I've those two things that have colored the landscape of my life, they don't control me anymore. And they probably still would if this project had not come about. And I'm grateful for that because I'm 74 years old and I'm in reasonably good health, both physically and the mental acuity to do this. I don't think God's through with me yet.
Right. I don't think so either.
You know, you may have seen I delivered copies of the book to my beta readers.
Oh, yeah.
The other day. I've still got a couple. One of them is a student at Guilford, was a student at Guilford many years ago. Another Eastern North Carolina kid from grew up in some level of poverty. He's had a very successful career. He is involved in local politics. He's a register of deeds in the county next door, was a county commissioner. He was one of my beta readers. And when I shared this with him, we reconnected in a way that I had no idea we were going to reconnect.
Yeah.
When I took the book to him to sign and give it to him, we rehashed some of this, Rachel. And I was lamenting. He tells the story about when he got his letter of acceptance to Guilford College and the financial aid package.
Yeah.
And Mr. Gurley was the name on the financial aid package. And he told his mom that I'm going to be able to go to college. And this man is showing me how I can do it.
Wow.
That was 40 years ago, you know?
Yes.
And so then moving forward, you talked about the mentoring program we did. Mm-hmm. When I left Guilford, I thought God had called me to do that.
Yeah.
And then maybe, and I still, well, maybe he did.
Right.
You know, but I knew I wasn't equipped to do it. I was really good at giving away other people's money. I never had any experience much raising money.
Makes sense, right?
We launched Motivation Ministry at the time of the real estate bust. You recall 2008, 2009, when a lot of small businesses were going out of business. It was a bad time to start a new business, a new nonprofit. So 7 years later, we had to lay it down. By that point, Rachel, and not me, first time I've ever said this publicly, we had put 20% of my retirement into it. And that's a lot. The retirement was a lot, but that was a 20% of my retirement. And we're fine. I mean, we're good, you know, we don't have the funds to do some of the things we might like to be doing, travel and stuff. But that's okay. We did what God called me to do. But in 7 years, we laid it down. God and I had some not very friendly conversations.
I can imagine. Yes.
Because I was convinced God called me to do this. And I'd heard all my life, God doesn't always call the equipped. You've heard this. Sometimes he equips the called. And I had to come face to face, Rachel, with which is it? Did he not equip me? Was I not malleable, as my son loves to use that word, was I not malleable enough to be equipped? And if so, that's on me and why. Or maybe he never really called me to do that. Maybe something I wanted to do. I'd been at college 30 years. I was ready to do something else. I enjoyed working with Christian artists and athletes. And it was a cool thing to do. I don't know. So we laid it down. I was in a dark place.
Yeah.
God and I were, I think we were still friends.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes with friends, you're hashing it out and asking questions.
I speak to that in the very last chapter in the epilogue of the book. I've had this conversation with a group of Christian brothers that I've become very close to, whom I would have never met, I suspect, had this not happened. Mm-hmm. And invariably, they will tell me, Anthony, shut up. You don't know that you failed. I mean, I still stay in touch with folks like yourself and some of the other kids. There are several around the country that I still stay in touch with.
Yes.
So you don't know you failed. You don't know which one of those people you made an important difference in their lives, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's one out of the entire crowd was the one that God wanted. We had a young woman who was an athlete, not an artist.
Okay.
In her senior year in high school, learned her mother had terminal cancer. We'll go into all of that story in this forum, but her mother died about a year and a half later when she was in college.
Mm.
Anyway, and I don't know the impact this experience had on her, you know, but it's anyway, moving forward real quick, this book would never have come to pass had motivation not been laid down.
Ooh.
I'd still be doing motivation.
True. And not have necessarily had the margin or the time to put into this project.
So the young man that I just mentioned, Jeff, name's Jeff Thigpen. He wouldn't mind me saying it publicly. Jeff, when I gave him the book, we were walking out of his office in the county office building. And he said, Anthony, he said, you know, you have no way of knowing what impact your life has had on all these thousands of students over the years. You know, I said, just you're looking at one.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You don't know the impact those 7 years had on these artists and athletes. You don't know. Don't worry about it. He says, because I think, and I want to believe this. He says, I think you may be about to embark upon the best thing God's ever asked you to do.
That's beautiful. Yes.
I have to believe that, Rachel.
Yes.
And I'm just grateful to you for an opportunity to talk about it. So.
Yes.
That was a long-winded answer to your initial prompt.
That's incredible.
I
love getting to hear more of the backstory behind the book and behind the project and how it all came to be. And I think that's so true. And it really is a real struggle. That struggle of God, was I actually following your lead and, you know, your mm-hmm. calling, or did I just think that that was what was going on and it was actually for different motives, you know? And I think we all struggle with that question in life mm-hmm. and figuring out how we're going to look at those things that happen to us, right? Or the mm-hmm. the way things turn out differently than we expected. But I think that's so powerful.
Well, it's interesting, Rachel. I've had an opportunity even before the book came out to speak to two or three occasions to groups. And frankly, I'm hoping that will become a big part of what this does, is an opportunity to not tell all the story, but talk about the question.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
And prompt encouraging positive ways of addressing the question and answering it. But invariably, when I speak to groups, no one has much of a comment at the end. But they come forward one by one and they'll say, Mr. Gurley or Anthony, I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been there, but we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
But we don't talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah. I think this, what's so powerful is you're bringing to light something that so many are, you know, dealing with and processing and saying, you know, this is okay to talk about and to, you know, work through, and that's actually probably really healthy for us to kind of process through these things and to know that we're not alone in it. I think that's a huge element as well.
Yeah. The thing I appreciate most about the experience, Rachel, is I have a dear friend. Again, he wouldn't mind. His name is John Bost. You uh-huh. can check him out on Amazon. He's written several books. He was a leader in the church my wife and I were attending at the time. I've been in small groups when he has been called upon to pray.
Mm-hmm.
I can't describe it. This man is the strongest prayer warrior I've ever known. And when you hear him pray, it is an experience that I never have anyplace else. I'm rambling here, but it's an amazing thing. But he and I were first. We knew each other through the church, but really had no much time together. I was asked to speak at a men's gathering at our church on a Saturday morning, the first year of Motivation. And they'd heard what I was doing, and they wanted to hear more about it. I told the story. John came up to me afterwards and said, and he jotted it down. He said, "You need to come to breakfast at the River Birch Lodge next Friday morning."
Yeah.
Said, "You need to hang out with these guys. There'll be about 80 to 100, 115, 20 Christian brothers there." Mm-hmm. Marketplace Christians, they call themselves.
Yes.
These are all highly successful businessmen. They have a few nonprofits like myself they let hang out with them. But very successful Christian businessmen. He said, "You need to hang out with these guys." He said, "They'll be a good influence on you." He says, "I'm not telling you that they're going to give you any money. They might. I don't know. That's not why you need to hang out with them. Mm-hmm. You just need to hang out with them because they could be a good influence on you." And so I did. I started going. I've been going for over 10 years now. I've spoken there once. I'm going to speak there again this Friday.
Oh, fine. Okay.
They learned what I was doing, and they've asked me to come and talk about it. But the point of all that is, the tagline, Rachel, is it's not church. It's not Sunday school. It's not Bible study. It's just a bunch of brothers trying to develop a friendship with Jesus through developing friendships with other men.
I love that. Yes, that's a great tagline. So good. Yeah.
The joke is, it's not church, it's not Bible school, it's not Sunday school. If you don't have fun, don't come back.
Yeah. So good. Yes.
But that has been one of the other anchors,
mm-hmm.
that group of men.
Right.
And I'm fairly certain, had I not gotten into this project, maybe that door would have opened. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it did. And it has been one of the anchors
through this whole transition.
Through this whole process. Yes.
Yes.
Because I've learned I'm not the only guy. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not the only guy that's had. And quite frankly, my story is relatively mild, mm-hmm. to some, to many. You know?
Yeah.
And that has been, in one way, I tell people, this whole project was therapeutic and cathartic at the same time.
Right. Yeah. It's challenging, but I think can be very healing. Thinking back, like you said, to the impact of kind of some things that have happened in our childhood. And like you said, some of those things that were spoken to you or over you that then have shaped so much of your life and, you know, kind of impacted how you see the world and how you come into the world. And I think that's true for all of us, you know, that there are maybe some things that either people intentionally said or did, or that we just picked up and took that way, you know, mm-hmm. That are shaping our perception of life. And I don't know if you just have an encouragement for people today, if they're feeling like, you know, maybe there were some things that they experienced in their childhood, and how you would recommend kind of going about uncovering some of that, and, you know, how to move forward.
Well, I've thought about that a lot, actually, over the last couple of years. It took me about 2.5 years to write the book.
Okay. Yeah.
From when I actually sat down and wrote the letter I never sent.
Yeah.
You know, from the time I sat down and wrote that till the time I finished the 8th draft, mm-hmm. and was ready to put it in front of some beta readers, about 2.5 years.
Okay.
It was about 5 years of gathering, because I've never been a journaler. I wish I had. This would have been so much easier. but I never had. And so it took about 5 years to go back and try. I've got a spreadsheet with, you know, people, places, things, events, that try to put all that together.
Mm-hmm.
In the process of all of that, and then actually putting together the manuscript, a couple of things. I discovered when I was writing, Rachel, I got to the place where my daddy walked out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
That event. I couldn't write anything else.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, what's the term? A writer's block?
Yes.
I could not. Yeah. Nothing would happen. I got in the car on a rainy day, drove to Goldsboro. Goldsboro is about 2 hours and 20 minutes east of here. That's where I was born and raised. Mm-hmm. I got in the car and drove to the cemetery where my daddy was buried.
Yeah.
I didn't go to his funeral. I'd never been to his gravesite. When both of our kids were born, when our son was born, I took him to see Daddy. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen Daddy but once after he left. And he never reciprocated. He never offered to come back and get to know his grandson. So when Courtney was born, I took her and the same thing. Okay. So I decided at that point, I've done what I can do. So I went to his gravesite and I spent about an hour under an umbrella out there, just being, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
And an amazing thing happened. I got home, sat down at the laptop the next day, and it just started, you know,
wow.
It just started yeah. flowing.
Uh-huh.
The same thing happened. And I'm going to get to your point. The same thing happened when we had to lay down motivation. It was about a 3-year period. And that was before I'd started writing this, but I was in the process of collecting everything. Yeah. Nothing would happen in terms of collecting the notes and yeah. stuff. And I really don't know what prompted it, but something happened. And I think it may have to do with the words that there's a song towards the end of the book.
Yes.
Written by a fellow down there in your part of the country.
Uh-huh.
And surely the presence of the Lord is in this place.
Right.
I remember being in church on Sunday morning when that happened, that song. And Rachel, you can see on the camera, the people hearing this can't, but it's just like I reached out and touched your cheek. It was as real as anything I've ever experienced in my life.
Wow. That's so powerful.
It was, you know, anyway, and from that point on, the collecting material, the writing, it all went relatively easy. So to your point, you have to have friends in this life. Mm-hmm. You have to have someone you can reach out to. And if you don't, I don't know what it takes, but somehow you must find a friend. Mm-hmm. If not others, start with one.
Yeah.
I you may know the story. My wife and I were in a trip to London to sort of celebrate crossing event. She fell on the first day, broke her shoulder and her wrist, crushed her shoulder.
I was going to say, it sounded like it just shattered.
A total shoulder replacement.
Wow.
And we got the doctors there to drug her up and truss it up, and we flew home the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
But that night in the hotel room, I called Rick LaBob and Frank Thomas,
mm-hmm.
two brothers, two men that I knew I could call any time of the day or night, anywhere, and ask or tell them anything.
Yeah.
And to your point, I don't know what the how is, but I know what the what is. And you must have at least somebody in your life, preferably someone of faith,
yeah.
that you can ask the hard questions to.
Mm-hmm.
The most hurtful thing that has been said to me in the process of this book, Rachel, was one of my beta readers, my best friend from high school.
Yeah,
I've known him 60 years. And when he read the book, two things, he says, "Are you sure you want to do this? Aren't you afraid of what some of your friends are going to think of you?" I said, "No, bud. I'm not. I'm well past that."
Yeah.
I hope they don't think less of me because they discovered something that I'm not proud of, but it's an important part of the story.
Exactly.
And then secondly, he said, "You are probably the biggest underachiever I've ever known."
Whoa.
And that hurt.
Yeah.
Because I think it's true.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I do. Because I was never willing to ask for help.
Yeah.
I shudder to think the opportunities in life, not financial material, but the opportunity, not just financial material, mm-hmm. but the opportunities in life that I never recognized or didn't avail myself because I wouldn't ask.
Yeah.
Let me be the one. I'll sit in the back of the room. No, let me be the one,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And so I think he's right, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is an effort to address. I don't know.
Yeah. And how I think it's beautiful how God can use our stories, even when, you know, we've maybe not stepped forward in those times or not taken those opportunities. But now, you know, you being able to share that and how that's going to impact lives as well is really, really powerful. Well, so
I spoke at the Quaker meeting in Goldsboro last Sunday, and we'll do so each of the next two Sundays.
Okay.
And but in the Quaker church, they have what they call the clerk of the meeting. It's kind of like the president of the whatever. Anyway, this is the clerk of the meeting.
Okay.
And last Sunday, I talked about friends, the relationship of friends in a relationship. Because part of what you read in the book, and I think you see, is this notion of friends, choices, and consequences.
Yes.
That really has become my mantra.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sequel to the book already in the works in the early stages that is going to focus on the relationship between friends, choices, and consequences.
Oh, that'll be so good. Yes.
And I mentioned that, and I shared the story about Bud telling what Bud said. And I said that in the front of the congregation. And I told him, I can tell you that because he is still my best friend.
Yes.
Uh-huh. You know, if I needed to hear that, I needed to hear it from him.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Sometimes that's, you know, the role that those best friends play in our lives is speaking the hard truth at times.
Well, and you're a dancer, you're a professional artist. I'm sure you have had people in your life that you consider your absolute closest friends and mentor who have told you things that hurt because they were trying to lift you up and to help you and to help you to confront something you need to confront.
Right. Oh, that's so true. So true. Speaking of kind of the friends, choices, and consequences, I think about there's so many great stories in the book, and I really encourage people to read it because it's just such a, like you said, it's very real, it's very raw, and it's looking at, you know, not just the highlights, but what are those valleys as well that, you know, that you've walked through and we can relate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think about kind of the story in, I think it was the first time you were pursuing your degree, your undergraduate degree, and kind of coming up on, I don't know that I'm going to be able to make it here, you know, and just kind of getting into that dark and down place. And I remember the story of the professor that just came and knocked on the door and kept knocking on the door, you know, and I think of that moment. I would love to let you share a little bit more about that. And then just the power of the people in our lives, friends and mentors.
Yeah, I came from a small town, 400 in our high school. I was a marshal. I was in the top 25 of my class out of 400 and some. I was a stellar student.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a kid from the project. Nobody in my family had ever gone to college. Nobody that I knew in the project was going, but I was going, and I was a leader in a sense, even though I didn't seek it. I just kind of happened. I don't know, a personality thing. People sort of thought they could trust me to do stuff, and I did. I go to Guilford College, and the first year was fine. It was good. But for the first time in my life, I felt out of place. Because I didn't have any money. And I couldn't do things that all other students were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I resented that. I'm not proud of that, but I did. I let that overcome me. Went back the second year, and I essentially spent a good part of the second year watching TV in the lounge in the dorm, and sleeping in. This was the height of the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King assassination, Robert Kennedy. You know, just it was the war was raging. It was a bad time, and so I essentially quit going to class for the most part. As Rachel mentioned, one day I heard a knock on the door in our suite, and I didn't want to answer it, but I finally did, and it was Dr. Pete Moore, what in the Quaker circles they called a weighty friend, with a capital F, Society of Friends, Quakers, a weighty friend. He was well-known globally in the Quaker church. He was a professor of religion. Quite the athlete himself, both basketball and swimming back in his day. I invited him in. I was so embarrassed. We get into this conversation. He's just, I ask your friends, are you okay? And they said, well, they hadn't seen you in a while. They see you in the calf and so forth. But so I just want to come and see if you're okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're all right. And I said, well, No, I don't think so. I don't know what's happening. We had the conversation, and I'll never forget what he told me. Because at that point, if I didn't drop out, I was going to get dismissed. I was flunking out. Mm-hmm. And he says to me, "It's okay. You know, sometimes it's okay to call time out. Mm. You know, reconnoiter. You know, think about what you want to do with yourself if you don't come back next year."
Yeah.
And do something constructive. And I write about that in the book. Mm-hmm. I did. And he said, "It's okay. Find some time for you and your God. Y'all need to work at this. Mm-hmm. Figure out what it is. It's okay. You know, there's no shame in being where you are." And so that was the first 2 years of what was a 10-year stint to get a 4-year degree, right, in 3 efforts. Mm-hmm. And Pete and I continued our friendship. I ended up coming back to work at that college after I graduated several years later. And he and I were very good friends for many, many years after that. I would like to think that any of us can have the kind of influence on a struggling young mind or older mind, mm-hmm, that Pete had with me sitting on the edge of my bed in that dorm room that morning. Yeah. Because it could have gone a very different, ugly way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But just it didn't. Those moments. And sometimes we don't even see the fruit of some of those conversations, but just the moments that are kind of pivotal in our lives, you know, when someone speaks a
word. And little did I know that I would end up coming back to Guilford. I had no idea whether I'd come back to Guilford ever or not.
Right.
And certainly didn't have any idea that he and I would become close friends, mm-hmm, for many years.
That's really amazing. That. So neat. That's definitely a thread throughout the whole book of, you know, the people who sometimes we don't even realize, but how those people are really that anchor for us in a lot of ways and help to hold us. I love that concept in the book of finding our anchors.
I really don't know if I know I didn't appreciate the importance of anchors. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't appreciate the importance of friends. Yeah. I didn't understand the value of time and space, you know?
Yeah.
I'm probably not unique in that.
Yeah, okay. We just kind of are going through life and we're not necessarily appreciating that.
That's sort of what this whole epistle is about.
Right.
Pay a little more attention to the value of time and space, mm-hmm, and how they, you know, interact. Be a little more aware of the importance of friends in your life. I talk about, I've never met a college student, Rachel, that I believe woke up in the morning, rolled out of the bed and thought, "What can I do to screw my life up today?"
Right.
Because that's not what we do.
No.
Right.
No.
But we wake up in the morning, we go about our business. We may or may not pay a whole lot of attention to who we're hanging out with or the innocuous minor choices that we make during the day, mm-hmm, that are influenced by those folks that we're hanging out with.
Exactly.
You know, and I might just pay a little more attention intentionally to who you're going to hang out with and how you're letting those folks influence your choices. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so, and that gets you to the anchors, coaches. In my case, it was coaches.
Yes.
I was never a stud athlete, Rachel. Mm-hmm. I was the trainer and head manager. Yes. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And to this day, two of my best friends are my 85-year-old high school football and baseball coach. I saw both of them last Friday night at an event down in Goldsboro. I went to Omaha the COVID year to the Champ College World Series with one of them. I went to the Army-Navy game a year ago with the other one. But they became the fathers that I never had.
Yeah.
So they became anchors to me and still are. And there's a third one, David Odom, but he's a little bit younger. I'm blessed to have an anchor that I wake up beside every morning and go to sleep beside every night.
Yeah.
I don't know how in the world she was foolish enough to say yes after 4 months.
Uh-huh.
But it was a God thing. I have no doubt. She was a very godly woman then. She still is. And she has never wavered through all. You've read the book. She has never wavered through some of all of this. Never. Not once.
Incredible. Yes.
And I couldn't do anything knowingly that would ever cause her pain. And we celebrated our 50th anniversary 2 years ago now almost. And anyway, the faith walk.
Yes.
Okay. I was fortunate enough that my mama put me on the bus to a Pentecostal holiness church when I was 8 years old. And the faith walk has gone in a number of directions since in churches and so forth. But I've never completely left the path.
Yeah.
I have strayed. I've stepped off. I've gotten out of step. But I have never questioned in a serious way the presence, you know? Sometimes if you go into Quaker meetings, Rachel, you'll see a picture on the wall. Old traditional 18th century Quaker meetings have all the women sitting on one side, the men on the other, and a facing bench.
Okay.
The leadership. And there's this ethereal presence hovering over it. And the picture is called the presence in the midst.
Uh-huh.
Not the presence in the M-I-S-T. The presence in the midst of this gathering of friends. So in spite of my shortcomings over the years, that presence has never strayed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm keenly aware of that. Last but not least, Philippians 4:8.
Mm-hmm.
Philippians 4:8. When I launched the motivation program, the mentoring program, I said, we need a scriptural reference. And Philippians 4:8 came out somehow. Whatever is true, it's Paul's letter to the church of Philippi. It says, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is righteous, whatever is pure, lovely, or admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think on these things. So I want those students to roll out of bed and don't think about, why can I screw my life up? Roll out of bed and think about that concept.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, chances are you'll make better choices. You may still make some bad ones. You probably will. We all do. But maybe you'll make better choices. And those choices will lead you to, will be influenced, I should say, by better friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, you deal with the consequences
yes.
that come from all of that.
Right. Yeah. Learning from it. Moving forward.
Well, that's actually what the mantra is. Friends, choose them carefully and cultivate.
Yes.
Because they don't just grow.
Right. We have to intentionally.
You
got to
water them. You
got to
feed them. You got to nourish them.
Yep.
Choices, make them wisely and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Let those friends that you've cultivated nurture and guide those choices.
Mm-hmm.
And then third, consequences, embrace them graciously and move on.
Yes.
Don't get stuck in the wow moments or the valleys, you know?
Mm-hmm. So good.
Move on. All of that under the umbrella of the faith walk, though.
Yes.
I hope that comes through pretty clear in the book. I think it does.
I think so as well. Yeah.
So God and I still talk about why he did what he did, why I did what I did in terms of the ministry. But I'm increasingly learning that I really do think maybe this is where I was supposed to be, and given my hard-headedness and so on, wouldn't have gotten here. My inability to ask would never have gotten me here.
Yeah,
had I not been forced into this the way I have been.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, I love just how you thread all those things through the book. And something that I think is really especially relevant with artists is the idea of, I think it's in the chapter, something needs to change. And you talk about kind of this push and pull between ideas and dreams that we have and then actually taking action on them, you know? And I think at that point you're talking on, you had an idea that you felt like was, you know, an idea from the Lord, but then kind of waited and just kind of thought about it, but didn't really take action. And then the idea of motivation ministries coming about and actually stepping out in faith and moving forward with that. But I think that's something that we all, especially creative, you know, people, writers or artists, we tend to have ideas, but kind of what is that tension there between having the idea and then actually taking action on it?
Well, when I told friends that I was going to be doing this podcast, and I explained to them a little bit of what I know of your development and how you got into this through the COVID time and all. Yeah. And I said, and she's focusing on Christian artists to a large extent. Mm-hmm. And I said, she is, if I understand the mission, it's kind of talk to the folks she's talking to. How do you manage to pursue that passion, mm-hmm. And figure out how to make a living,
yeah.
if you can, doing it, and do all of that while nurturing that faith walk that has been so important to you.
Yes. Well said. Well said.
And putting those three together, you're right. Sometimes it's not easy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Sometimes it's not easy. I think the flip side of that coin is don't expect it to be easier if you forego any of those three.
True.
Don't give up on your passion just to pursue a living and be in church. You don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
good. So speaking of kind of thinking about our listeners today, I love to give everybody that comes on the show a chance to just share something. If you have something on your heart for those that are listening. So yeah, if you have a word of encouragement or wisdom, and the whole book, I think, is something that's going to be an encouragement.
Well, you can see this. The people on the podcast can't. Young people today wear these little bracelets.
Yes, yeah.
And so I have bracelets made up with the Friends Choices Consequences.
Love that. Yes.
And that really is, we've already talked about it, but that really is what's on my heart. Mm-hmm. I have become convinced that there is no one answer. There is no one key. There is no one anchor, but the reality is God made us to be, I believe God made us to be social animals. Mm-hmm. He didn't just create Adam. He created a partner, a friend. Mm-hmm. He created a companion. I believe he expects us to share our lives with other sentient beings. Okay. To do that, I think it's critical that you do choose your friends carefully, make your choices wisely based on the influence of those friends. And then whatever the good choices can have bad consequences.
True.
Bad, stupid choices can somehow turn out okay.
Right.
Whatever those embrace them graciously, understand them, and then move on and repeat the cycle, repeat the cycle, repeat the cycle. Mm-hmm. And if you do all of that, seeking to concentrate on what's true, noble, righteous, pure, lovely, anything is excellent or praiseworthy, never steering far from that path where the presence never leaves, somehow you're going to get to be an old man like me and it's all going to be okay.
Yes. So good.
I just prayed. I'm 74. I pray that God will give me enough more years I'm looking forward to seeing him face to face and having another conversation about why it had to be so difficult getting through this thing.
Yes, exactly.
But I just pray that I got to find the plumber in Dubuque.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So if you're listening to this by chance,
that's right.
You can reach out and... Yeah, no, that's good wisdom, good encouragement today. And
you have another question you always ask everybody.
I do. This is one of my favorite questions, actually, which is what is one of your favorite things right now?
I thought you would never ask. You've read the book. I don't know whether you've seen the back cover. I think I sent you the back cover.
Yes, yes, I did see the back cover.
On the back cover of the book, they always want you to put a headshot.
Uh-huh.
They did not like the headshot that I sent them because hopefully somebody will read this and they'll hear this and it's a picture of me holding Jethro.
Jethro. Yeah.
They didn't like Jethro in the picture.
Aww.
They just want the headshot. My favorite thing, Rachel, is almost every night if I am at home, mm-hmm. I'm not traveling, almost every night, this little 5-year-old furball named Jethro. He's all black except for his vest and little pantaloons and a little tummy. He's white underneath. jumps up in my chest, looks me right dead in the eyes, yeah, as if to say, I love you, Pappy.
Aww, so
and
sweet.
Then he allows me to do what I love to do. I get to pretend I'm a bathtub. Uh-huh. I just stretch my legs out on the ottoman. He moves around and he commences to lie there and bathe himself, as cats will do.
Yep.
And after he bathes himself for a couple of minutes, then he just settles in.
So sweet.
And after a while, one of us wakes up and I go to bed and I put him in my place.
Uh-huh.
So I look forward almost every day to getting to be a bathtub.
Aww.
for a little bit.
That's so sweet. And y'all have to read the story of Jethro and how Jethro came into y'all's lives. It's such a sweet story. And just, you know, God's timing.
I may have mentioned the sequel to this that we're beginning to formulate. There's actually four children's books doing the drawing board. Mm-hmm. And you read it in this book. Jethro came along when I was going through that bad time.
Right. Yeah, God brought Jethro just at the right
moment. Bad hurricane, a little 5-week-old little kitten shows up at the bottom of the steps. Again, that's not coincidental, Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And so the working title for the first children's book, hopefully we can get it out within the next year or so, is When Love Comes on Four Legs.
Aww,
now, I'm not here to sell the book, but I want to memorialize Jethro because God showed up in... And he chose a little four-legged furry creature that I did not ever want.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I never wanted a cat.
Yeah.
Never. But today, you could not buy him.
Yeah.
Aww. I mean, I'm convinced he God sent him at a place. And we talked about place and time.
Yep.
God sent this little 5-week-old furball into my life at a place and time that something needed to appear.
Yes. So good. Well, this has been such a great conversation, and I love getting to hear more about the backstory of the book and just getting to share with everyone a bit of your journey. And I hope that people will check it out and read it and get to be encouraged by your vulnerability and openness and just sharing, you know, your story so that they can recognize their own story and, you know, bring that to the world as well. So do you want to just share the best place for people to connect with you and also to get the book?
Well, I appreciate that. Our website is anthonygurley.com, and it's a very, very skin and bones website at this point. We'll build it out as opportunity provides. My email is anthony@anthonygurley.com.
Perfect.
And I'm on Facebook. We have a fan page, a book page also that links to my personal page at Anthony Gurley. I do have an Instagram account, but I'm not, beyond Facebook, I'm not a social media animal.
Yeah.
But I do have Instagram.
Okay. Sounds great. That's perfect.
I am learning new tricks.
Yes, learning new tricks. So excited that today's launch day and getting it officially out into the world. Maybe a few copies went out a few days early, but so excited. And can't wait for people to be able to get this in their hands and, you know, hear more and get to connect with you. So thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this today and sharing with us.
It's my pleasure. You take care. God bless. And choose your friends carefully.
You can find all the links, full show notes, and additional resources on our website, creativeimpactpodcast.com. If you're interested in supporting the show, some great ways to do that are to share it with a friend, to rate and review wherever you're listening. And then also, if you're interested in giving financially, you can check out our Patreon community, where you get bonus content each month and have a special part in helping make this podcast possible. You can access our Patreon community on the link at our website or by going to creativeimpactpodcast.com/PATREON. Thank you all so much for listening to the Creative Impact Podcast. The music for the show was produced by Michael Cash. Until next time, remember that you were designed to create. You were made to inspire. Continue living with purpose and making an impact. I'll see you next time, friends.